Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Brait Interim Results Presentation. All participants will be in listen-only mode. For the participants that have dialed in, there will be an opportunity to ask questions later during the conference. For the participants on the webcast, please type your questions in the webcast question box. If you should need assistance during the call, please signal for an operator by pressing star and then zero. Please note that this call is being recorded. I'd now like to turn the conference over to Mr. Peter Hayward-Butt. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much, and thank you very much to all our investors and stakeholders who've taken the time this morning to join us. In terms of the presentation, I will take you through an executive summary, just a very quick highlights package of the results and obviously the Premier listing, which was announced this morning. Sabelo will then take you through the Brait NAV and the liquidity update, and then we'll go through in a bit more detail the Premier portfolio performance, portfolio company performance, the Virgin Active performance, New Look, and then we'll get onto valuations and a last summary slide on the Brait strategy. With respect to the executive summary and the performance, which we'll go through in much more detail later, from a Virgin Active perspective, we continue to see positive momentum across the membership base. Importantly, across all territories, we've seen 20% membership growth year to date, which we think is a decent performance. From a South African perspective, memberships are up 18%, the U.K. up 17%, Italy up 33%, and the Asia Pacific up 20%. So a decent performance across the various territories, and we'll go into a bit more detail on that later. Equally importantly, all the key territories, by that we mean the U.K., Italy, and the South African business, are at EBITDA run rate break-even, or at least forecast to be by the end of the year. As we've said many times over, APAC will take longer to recover, and we'll delve into a bit more detail on that during the presentation. With respect to the strategy, as we know, Dean and the team have been implementing a revised and a rejuvenation strategy on the business, which is definitely starting to pay dividends. The acquisition of the Real Foods assets, which was Kauai and New, was completed about a couple of months ago, and we're already seeing the benefits of that in the shift from Virgin Active to the broader wellness space. From a Premier perspective, a very strong operational performance over the last 6 months, EBITDA up 16%, and that's driven by a number of different things: market share gains, volume growth, despite the very significant cost pass-through on commodity prices that we had to make over the last 6 months, and very importantly, a retained focus on cost management and operational leverage in the business. Excitingly, it came across all four divisions, so it wasn't just the Millbake business that performed well, and significant synergies we saw in the Mr. Sweet acquisition have started to bear fruit, and we've seen all of the divisions really start to contribute significantly. As part of the pre-IPO preparation, we collapsed the shareholder structure. There were shareholder loans and preference shares from Brait into Premier. Those were all collapsed and equitized, and as part of that, there was a dividend distribution paid out of $950 million, and that was paid to shareholders and received in November. As you all know, the company today announced its intention to float. There's very strong cornerstone investor demand, and we'll touch a bit on that later in the presentation. From a New Look perspective, a very solid 6 months. As we all know, it's extremely difficult times for fashion retailers in the UK. The business has performed well, which I think does demonstrate the robustness of the platform it's built. Very strong performance over the first three quarters of this year. Remember, we've got a March year end, so only two of those count for the September numbers. But and despite the fact that we haven't received furlough benefits in this calendar year that we received in the previous calendar year, the performance is up year to date. From a Brait perspective, this transaction in terms of the Premier listing will be a transformational one for the business. Brait will receive proceeds of around $4.5 billion after costs as a result of the IPO and the distribution, and that will remove any liquidity constraints and strengthen our balance sheet. The current RCF, or revolving credit facility, is around about 2.6 billion rand. So as you can see, if we raise 4.5 billion after costs, we will be left with a very significant cash balance in the business. That will be used, as I mentioned, to repay the RCF and for general working capital investment purposes. The strategy absolutely remains to unlock value for shareholders through unbundling the assets to them in time, and this would look to be completed by the latest of December 2024. Just a very quick high-level overview of the offer structure, which we will go into in much more detail later on. The premier IPO offer size will be 3.7 billion, which includes a 200 million rand greenshoe. The IPO price range has been set at just under 54 rand to 67 rand per premier share. Not that number won't mean anything to people. It's based on a premier share. Shares an issue, and the implied equity value is 6.9 to 8.6 billion. Importantly, he's pointing out that equity value is post the receipt or the payment of a 950 million rand distribution. That implies an EBITDA multiple of 6 to 7 times LTM EBITDA, which compares to the 7.6 that we value as fair value, the asset at and Brait NAV, which implies a somewhere between a 10 and 28% discount to the equity value of Premier post the refinance that I referred to earlier. And we'll touch again in a bit more detail on that later. Very pleasingly, we have Cornerstone in demand before we opened the IPO. Titan is committed to take its pro rata share, which is 36%, throughout the offer range. So wherever it prices between 54 Rand and 67 Rand, Titan is committed to taking its pro rata share of that. And another institutional investor who came in of late, another 2.4, which means just under 40% of the offer is already subscribed for throughout the price range, whether that's at the bottom, the middle, or the top of the price range. Equally importantly, the IPO has been fully underwritten by Titan at the bottom end of the price range, so subject to there being sufficient free float, Titan would undertake to underwrite the rest at the bottom end of the price range. With respect to the multiples, that implies, as I mentioned, the 6 to 7 times LTM EBITDA compares with the peer group LTM of average of 7.5, which is broadly where we value the businesses for fair value purposes. And I think if you look on the right-hand side, and it doesn't matter whether you take 1 year, 2 years, or 3 years for this comparison, there's very significant EBITDA outperformance by Premier compared to the peer group. In this scenario, over the last year, Premier grew at just under 30% as opposed to the peer group average of 7.4%. From a Brait perspective, we've mentioned this to investors who we've chatted to already, and I think it's very important to point out that any Brait investor who participates in the IPO prior to the existing holding will mitigate any dilution in the IPO. So to the extent an investor owns 2% of Brait and takes up 2% of the IPO offer, there will be zero dilution. It's a mathematical formula for any Brait shareholder who participates. And to that end, we will ensure that Brait investors get preferential allocation rights in the IPO at the market clearing price. So again, importantly for an investor, a Brait investor who wants to participate and has been a supportive shareholder and wants to minimize any dilution, there will be a preferential allocation for them at the market clearing price. To the extent there isn't sufficient demand to get to the 20% free float, which we very much doubt will be the case, but to the extent that that happens, the listing will not proceed. And under that circumstance, RMB and Titan have irrevocably committed to invest 3.5 billion rand to acquire about 50% of the shares, and Premier will remain unlisted. We think it's an unlikely outcome, but it's certainly an outcome which it's effectively pricing at the bottom end of the range would give the same proceeds to Brait. So therefore, as I mentioned, Brait will receive proceeds from the IPO of about 3.7 billion, and its share of the distribution is already received of 0.92 billion, which totals 4.6 billion before fees and expenses. And I think, as we can say, this relatively holistically deals with Brait's liquidity issues, and even after paying the RCF, Brait would remain with 2 billion rand of surplus cash. Just moving on to the Brait and NAV liquidity, I'll hand over to Sabelo.
Thanks, Peter. Good morning, all. Starting with slide 8, Brait's reported NAV per share of 8 Rand 40 is relatively flat for the 6 months ended 30 September 2022 compared to March NAV of 8 Rand 37. Total assets of 19.1 billion is weighted 54% Premier, 41% Virgin Active, and 5% New Look. Total liabilities of 8.1 billion Rand comprise Brait's 3 billion committed borrowing facility due 30 June 2024, referred to as the BML RCF, which is drawn at reporting date by 2.6 billion rand. The 150 million pound convertible bonds due 4 December 2024, valued in terms of IFRS at 2.8 billion. The 3 billion exchangeable bonds issued by subsidiary BIH, which are due 3 December 2024, and valued in terms of IFRS at reporting date at 2.5 billion. Accounts payable of 157 million, which largely comprises the accrual of coupons on these two bond instruments stated above. The resultant NAV is 11.1 billion rand, which equates to 840 per share. Slide 9 sets an overview of NAV movements for the period under review. To note at the outset that the peer groups for Premier, Virgin Active and New Look remain unchanged. Premier is valued on a post-IFRS 16 basis, while Virgin Active and New Look valuation metrics are quoted on a pre-IFRS 16 basis. Premier's carrying value increased by 11% from 9.3 billion to 10.3 billion rand. The main driver of the increase in carrying value is maintainable EBITDA, which is based on Premier's last 12 months achieved EBITDA of 1.6 billion rand. The valuation multiple of 7.6 times is unchanged. Net debt of 1.9 billion excludes capex spent on the recently commissioned Pretoria Mill and Bakery. Great equity participation in Premier post-dilution for management's incentive scheme is 97.3%. Virgin Active's carrying value decreased by 5% from 8.3 billion to 7.9 billion rand. Maintainable EBITDA is based on a look-through to a two-year forward sustainable level of 113 million pounds, which includes 3 million pounds EBITDA from the Real Food acquisition that completed in the period. The two-year forward valuation multiple of 9 times remains unchanged. Net third-party debt of 438 million pounds includes a 24 million pound normalization adjustment for the estimated effect of working capital and costs deferred during the lockdown period. Post acquisition of Real Foods nutrition assets, Great equity and shareholder funding participation decreased from 70.6% to 67.4%. New Look's carrying value increased by 27% from 672 million to 854 million rand. Maintainable EBITDA is based on a sustainable level of 55 million pounds. The one-year forward valuation multiple of 5 times is unchanged. Net debt of 38 million pounds includes 4 million adjustment for estimated deferred costs during lockdown period. Great equity participation in New Look is unchanged at 13.4%. While enterprise value was largely flat, equity value increased due to Brait's pro rata 9.1 million pounds investment to purchase the commitments under the HSBC operating facility. The decrease in carrying value for other investments is mainly due to the realization of Brait 4's investment in Consol. Turning to page 10, the liability movements were driven by interest costs of 280 million for the period on the two bonds and the BMO RCF, 140 million rand IFRS accounting charge, representing the 6-month tick up in the value of the deemed liability component for the exchangeable and convertible bonds, 130 million rand translation impact on the rand carrying value of the 2024 convertible bond, and operating expenses of 76 million, which are in line with the comparative period. Slide 11 analyzes the rate liquidity and debt. In terms of liquidity, cash balance as at 1 April 2022 was 83 million rand. Rate received 416 million rand proceeds from the investment portfolio, mostly comprising 377 million realization proceeds from the sale of Consol and 24 million shareholder funding repayments by Premier. Total expenses paid during the period were 128 million rand. Purchase of investments of 182 million relates to Brait's pro rata 9.1 million pound investment into New Look, as stated earlier. Net cash outflow from financing activities of 150 million relates to drawdowns of 378 million on the BML RCF, offset by capital and interest repayments of 308 million and 50 million respectively, as well as accrued interest amounting to 109 million rand. The resulting group closing cash balance at reporting date is 48 million rand. In terms of borrowings at reporting date, the 3 billion BML RCF, which is secured by the assets of BML, was drawn at 2.6 billion at reporting date. Including the closing cash balance of 48 million rand, available liquidity at reporting date was 451 million rand. Rate is in compliance with all debt covenants on the BML RCF and 2024 convertible bonds. On the 4th of November 2022, post-reporting date, Premier paid a 950 million return of capital distribution to its shareholders. Rate's proceeds received of 924 million were applied to paying down the BML RCF. In terms of the facility agreement, the facility limit reduced by 462 million, representing 50% of the distribution received to 2.5 billion rand. resulting in post-balance sheet available liquidity, including cash, of 913 million. Thank you, and over to you.
Thanks, Sivan. Thank you very much. Let's then turn to the portfolio companies and their performance. So starting with Premier, at a summary high-level performance perspective, a very, very strong 6 months, as I've mentioned. Revenues were up 24% year-on-year to 8.7 billion rand. Pleasingly, EBITDA was also up 16% to 821 million, and EBIT up to 604 million, which is a 23% year-on-year increase. But probably the most important point, I think, on this slide is actually the return on invested capital, which, as you can see on the right-hand side, increased to 14.9%. That number used to be 8.9% probably 2 or 3 years ago, and really does show what management has done with this business to increase not just the profitability, but to ensure the capital base and denominator is kept under control. From a net third-party debt perspective, leverage ratio fell all the way down to 1.4 times. As I mentioned, as part of the distribution, gearing was increased by just over a billion rand, and therefore, at the time of listing, the leverage ratio will be about 2 times EBITDA. Again, I won't dwell too much on this page. The management team will be on the road in the course of the next 2 weeks, but I think it's important to say Premier and the feedback we've had from the market has been extremely positively received. Premier really is seen as a sector champion within the broader South African FMCG market. It is the largest unlisted essential foods business, hopefully soon to be listed. And I think very importantly, you know, one of the key questions that we had from investors when we last spoke in May, I think it was did the company have the ability to pass through cost pressures in a volatile inflationary environment? I think you can see from the results over the last 6 months that management has done a very, very good job of not just passing on price increases, but growing volumes at the same time. It's got a very consistent track record of superior financial performance. As I mentioned, whether you look over 12 months, 18 months, 24 months, or 36 months, the performance really has significantly outperformed the peer group. And I think this is largely because over the last 6 or 7 years, there's been continued CapEx investment into really high-quality operating facilities, whether that be the Pretoria Bakery or other bakeries around the country, including Cape Town, that the team has invested in. This really has set the business up to succeed. Over 5 billion rand has been spent on this, on the various operating facilities in the group over the last 6 or 7 years. And I think credit must go to Kurvis and his team, a very highly skilled and experienced management team who really do understand this market. And I think all credit for this set of results must go to them. In terms of the performance, I think we touched on some of this on the left-hand side. But if you look at the market share progression, again, we see an uptick in market share literally across every single category, I think bar one, over the last 12 months. And again, this is something that the management team has invested behind to ensure that it happens. It doesn't just happen overnight. And this has been a progression over the last 2 to 3 years where market share in all of the key categories has continued to grow. From an operational highlights perspective, full production levels have been reached at the Pretoria Bakery. It was commissioned early in the year and fully commissioned the second line, I think it was at the end of March, and that's now running at full production, which is a massive milestone, and again, you know, credit to Kurvis and the team. We'll talk a bit about the numbers for the last 6 months, but as I mentioned, despite a 20% price increase as a pass-through of commodity prices, we saw 5% increase in volumes over the 6 months, so the ability to pass on price increases and grow volumes really has been a double whammy for the business. The Mr. Sweet acquisition, the confectionery business that was bought in the business, and the Otaniqua Bakery, which was acquired earlier in the year, have both been fully integrated. And in the case of Mr. Sweet, very significant synergies of around 50 million of efficiencies have been achieved already in the first half of 2023. Moving on to the next slide, just to give you a bit more detail on how the Millbake business performed. Again, as I mentioned, revenue was up 25%. The mix between price and mix was 20.2% up, volume up 4.5%. So, as I mentioned, the ability to pass on price increases as well as grow volumes has been demonstrated. With respect to EBITDA up to 761, 15% growth year on year. Whilst margins were impacted, importantly, we ensured that the contribution, rand contribution number stayed the same. That's exactly what we focus on. So with higher commodity prices, you would expect, obviously, the margin to shrink if the rand contribution remains the same. Moving on to just quickly talking about the the Premier's ability to pass on the commodity price increases. You can see all the way back to 2019. So if we take the first half of the year, back in 2019 to 2020 to 21, 22, 23, it gives you some idea of how volumes have, and prices have grown. The black numbers that you see there are volume growth. The green ones you see are price growth. So in every single comparative period there, you've seen the ability to pass on price increases to the market while still growing volumes. So very significant volume growth over that period of time. And if you look in the last half of the year, so first half of 2022 compared to first half of 23, as I mentioned, 20-odd% increase in prices with a corresponding increase of just under 5% in volumes. Again, a spectacularly good result, which is reflected over the, on the chart on the right, which shows that margins are up from, if you rebase all to 100, 100 to about 160, and at the same time, the SAFEX wheat price is also growing from 100 to just over 160. So very significant margin improvement in the business as it's continued to pass on price increases whilst growing volumes. But equally pleasingly, the rest of the businesses also performed very well. So the groceries and international business, revenue up 20%, nearly 1.5 billion of contribution from this part of the business, which is very, very significantly up from where it was only 2 or 3 years ago. Pleasingly, EBITDA up 24% and margins up slightly to 112 million rand. The contributing parts of that, sugar and confectionery increased by 46% to just under half a billion rand. Clearly part of that was due to an increase in Mr. Sweet, which only had 3 months of consolidation in the prior year to 6 months this year. But again, across the board, whether it be home and personal care up 9% or CIM revenues up 12%, pretty significant contributions across the board. Just a quick breakdown of the income statement. As I mentioned, revenues up 24%, Millbake up 25%, groceries up 20%, supported by the inclusion of Mr. Sweet for a first full year. EBITDA up 16%, and I've touched a bit on that. Corporate head office costs effectively only increased by 7% once you exclude the one-off transaction costs due to the IPO. EBIT, very pleasingly, up 23%, and the reason for that is, as I've mentioned in the past, very significant overinvestment in the assets over the last 5 years. I think we have about a 30 to 40% when you increase compared to our peer set when you compare EBITDA to CapEx, so a significant investment in the portfolio. And that has seen our depreciation and amortization increase over the years. Very pleasingly, for the first time in a long time, that's been flat or slightly down year on year. And I think we'll continue to see that going forward as that investment continues to unwind in our P&L. From a cash flow perspective, again, a very significant increase in the performance. Cash flow from operations before working capital of just under 900 million rand, up from 731. Relatively similar working capital movements of 264. Adjusted for that is the debtors, which came in literally 2 or 3 days after the month end. So effectively a net increase in working capital there of just about 150 million, which is exactly the same as last year. Maintenance capex, very significant number this year where we continue to invest in our facilities as we promised to invest as we would do. And if you compare that with the expansionary capex we had last year, the expansionary capex slightly down. Most of that last year was in the Pretoria Bakery. We finished off the Pretoria Bakery in terms of it was commissioned really in March. So a decrease in the expansionary capex, but an increase in the maintenance capex over the year. And that resulted in operating cash flow post-capex costs and finance costs and tax of 300 million, which compared to 134 in the previous year. That was responsible for driving the debt down to a level of 1.4 times from 2.1 this time last year. In terms of the outlook, and before I get on to the offer structure, post-year end, as Sabela mentioned, Premier refinanced long-term debt. It increased the debt by just over a billion rand, lower interest rates, increased flexibility, and a full bullet repayment profile. So it does show the banks were very keen to lend to this business. So therefore, overall, despite the increase in debt, you know, there won't be a significant increase actually in the interest, given that we've got it refinanced at lower rates. 950 million was distributed to Premier shareholders, of which we are 97%, as a special distribution based on the restructuring of the balance sheet prior to the IPO, i.e. the removal of the interest-bearing shareholder loans, which we had in there. From a recent trading perspective, trading has continued very strongly since the 30th of September, pretty much across all of the businesses. Commodity prices do remain elevated, but I think we would say relative to history, but I think the volatility has reduced over the past 6 months, which makes it easier to manage. Volatility is the killer in this as opposed to an elevated commodity price per se. Premier remains well covered, both from a commodity supply and pricing perspective, and I think the management team has done a very good job on the procurement front. We have seen, obviously, discretionary income under pressure. I think that's across the entire country. But I do think we continue to see, particularly in the informal space, a continued down trading to Premier's product range. From an outlook perspective, as we mentioned, Premier announced this morning its intention to float on the JSE. We do genuinely believe that the business remains well capitalized with respect to growth opportunities, both organically, and there's significant numbers of growth opportunities organically, but also in complementary adjacencies, and the management team continues to look out for opportunities there. You can see the benefit of operational leverage, when you're growing revenue and you've got a relatively fixed cost base, and I think the management team remains very focused on optimizing both the cost base and the operating platform going forward. Just talking a bit about the Premier listing, which was announced this morning, there's obviously a lot more detail in the ITF, so we would encourage investors to read that, but I'll try and give you a summary of that. From an offer price range perspective, that has been set at 53.82 to 67.04, which, as I mentioned, equates to an equity value of 6.9 to 8.6 billion. Just to give you an idea, that is after the refinancing, and I think it's important that that number won't tally with the NAV that you see in our books. So from an enterprise value, that range corresponds to 9.8 billion to 11.5 billion rand as an enterprise value, which equates to an LTM EV/EBITDA of 6 to 7 times. I think very importantly, when we talked to institutional investors in May and June, we went with our ears open, and one of the key messages coming back from investors was, ensure, given that we're going to own, as I say, Brait's going to own somewhere between 50 and 60-odd percent of Premier post the listing, and strong aftermarket performance is absolutely key. So the important message that came from investors was get the right investors into the book, price it in the right basis, allow investors from Brait to invest into the IPO to minimize any dilution, and as part of that, you'll ensure that you have a strong aftermarket performance. The value range, I think, suggests that. We have given all Brait investors, as I mentioned, the opportunity to invest pro rata. They will get preferential allocations, but we genuinely believe this gives all Brait investors the best way to realize a significant amount of value out of Premier whilst being able to put in their pro rata share. The base offer size will be 3.5 billion rand, which all comprises secondary shares sold down by, effectively sold by Brait. And there's an over-allotment option which equates to 200 million. So the total offer size is actually 3.7, of which the green shoe is 200. The ITF was launched today. The offer will open on the 22nd of November and close on the 2nd of December. From a cornerstone investor perspective, we are extremely appreciative of Titan and another investor who's come in already. They've committed to take 36%, which is their pro rata share of the base offer size, committed throughout the price range. So it doesn't matter where it prices, Titan will undertake to take its share of the offer. Titan will also remain take the remainder of the base offer if it prices at the bottom end of the range, so long as there's sufficient free float taken up by the institutional investors. Should the IPO not achieve the JSE free float, it obviously wouldn't list, and under that scenario, Titan and RMB will invest 3.5 billion at the bottom end of the price range, and Premier would remain unlisted. So as I mentioned before, any shareholders who participate in the IPO and therefore mitigate any dilution will be entitled to preferential allocations with reference to their fully diluted shareholdings in Brait. And all Brait shareholders who submit an order into the book for their pro rata share will also, and this is something new, be given their accession of their voting rights. And the reason we did this, we also heard from investors that, why weren't we unbundling Premier in totality today? We can't do that until we settle the convertible bond, as you know. But what we try to simulate as far as possible is a full unbundling today. Now, we've done that, obviously, through selling a portion of the shares. What we've also undertaken to do is any shareholder who wants to get their pro rata voting rights and puts an order in the book for their pro rata share, we will, as Brait, give them their pro rata share of our voting rights on post-IPO. And again, we think that simulates as far as possible under the structural constraints we have and unbundling. As a result of the cornerstone investment that Titan is putting in, they will end up only 36% of the voting rights. Obviously, it wouldn't have been fair to make them take a mandatory offer for the business. So the Whitewash resolution was passed to ensure that that didn't happen. From a lockups perspective, again, we heard one of the most important points from investors in the IPO was that there wasn't an overhang. From a break perspective, as I mentioned, we dealt holistically with the debt. We are happy to be locked up for 360 days. We do not need the further liquidity. There are standard lockups for Premier of 180 days, for Titan of 180 days, and for senior management within Premier of 360 days. So as I mentioned, the IPO together with the recently concluded distribution will see 4.5 billion rand of proceeds after costs sitting with Brait, which it will use to repay the RCF and clear its path towards unbundling the rest of the assets to shareholders in due course. From a timing perspective, quickly, research was published today. There's three banks working on this. It's Standard Bank, Investec, and RMB. All three analysts have published research today. They are on the road for the next week or so, and then Kurbus and the team will start the management roadshow on the 22nd of November. The books will open on the 22nd and close, as I mentioned, on the 2nd of December. The expected listing date is the 8th of December, and we're very positive that that will happen. That's enough on Premier. Moving on to Virgin Active. Just to give you a quick territory update, and the numbers on the right-hand side show the year-to-date membership growth. So that's numbers of members at the beginning of the year, how much has each territory increased it by in the 10 months to October. Starting with South Africa, pretty strong sales across the last 9 or 10 months, significantly ahead of budget, significantly ahead of 2019 levels and pretty much in line with budget. We've seen net membership growth of about 90,000 members over that period of time, and that compares to about just under 30,000 members at the same time in 2019, which was a good year for sales, a nearly threefold increase in membership growth, net membership growth over the last 10 months. Net active members now are 587,000 in South Africa. From a perspective of what has the management team been up to, significant refurbishment of a number of key clubs has been undertaken, and we've seen very strong operating metrics post-reopening of those clubs, and we continue to look to do that. New managing director in the form of Jessica Spira is getting her feet under the desk, and very successfully so. She started on the 1st of October, and we look forward to her continued engagement in the business. And we've seen a number of initiatives in the South African business driven by Dean and the team, particularly the Padel initiative, which we really think is starting to increase the membership engagement around the South African business. And we've seen that already in a lower termination rate, certainly over the last 9 months or so. So again, from a year-to-date perspective, a membership growth of 18%. Italy had a very slow start to the year. As you'll remember, COVID restrictions were only really lifted at the beginning of April. But since then, there's been a very, very strong recovery. They're up to 141,000 active members, so 35,000 new members this year, active members. And if I gave you the same number for last year, that was actually 8,000. So, again, I'm doing the math in my head here, but nearly a 4.5 times increase compared to what we did in the same period for 2019. Whilst there has been strong performance, the inner-city clubs remain underutilized. It is an improving trend, but we still believe that there's some growth to happen once the work from home trends start to change. There have been a very significant increase in utility costs. I'll talk a bit about that later when we talk about the results. And we've had opened three new clubs very successfully. Luke has opened three new clubs in the territory. And it's very pleasing to say that the total membership is above the 2022 break-even membership level of 141,000 members. So a 33% increase year-to-date, a very significant and very pleasing performance. On the UK, again, a relatively decent performance from a year-to-date sales perspective, up 17%. It had a very strong first 6 months of the year. I think the last couple of months have been a bit slower, really driven by, I think, consumers being under pressure in the UK, as we've mentioned. But they've increased their membership base since the beginning of the year by 18,000 members net, and that compares to 2,000 members in 2019, so nine times more than they did in 2019. But I think we have started to see the consumer under pressure in the UK. We have seen increased terminations, and we've continued to have to drive sales growth and activate new flexible memberships to ensure that we can continue to grow our membership base there. There is a focus on reducing operating costs, which is already happening in that business, especially since utility costs in the UK, as they are in Italy, and growth capex from certain clubs is required over the next couple of months. From an APAC perspective, there have been long delays in COVID restrictions. In fact, I would say Thailand and Singapore still remain under some of those restrictions. That said, they've increased their membership base by 20% year on year. Australia's sort of more residential clubs have performed very, very strongly. What hasn't performed as strongly is the inner city and in-urban clubs. Those continue a bit like the London clubs to remain a bit under pressure, and we look forward to that relief coming through in that when that starts to change. From a head office perspective, Dean and the management team have restructured the way they focus on the business from a global to start focusing globally as opposed to operationally by territory. And this really has seen two things. One, a massive reduction in costs, but secondly, a much more improved accountability by the management team across the various countries as opposed to their own individual territories. A significant focus remains on what we call a quantitative capital allocation. When we look at growth projects, there are growth projects. Dean and the team remind us we've got to continue to grow to expedite the recovery, but we also need to manage tight liquidity. It is tight. It remains tight due to obviously higher interest rates across the board, utility costs, particularly in the UK and Italy, you know, load shedding related capex in South Africa, and obviously we want to bring forward some refurbishment capex. So all of that does put a strain on liquidity, so we need to measure, you know, both growth opportunities against ensuring that we continue to have sufficient liquidity in the business. I'm not going to dwell significantly on the strategy, but other than to say across all of the six key pillars of Dean's strategy, we're starting to see the benefits of that. I highlighted that in the previous presentation we gave back in May, I think it was, and tried to show what the outcomes are for the business. And without going into in detail, really it's around membership engagement, and again, membership engagement. If we get membership engagement up, we will reduce churn, we'll get ancillary revenues in through our enhanced product offering, and we'll be able to, in time, reduce terminations and gross sales through our IT platforms. So if we can get that right and we ensure that we spend the right capital on the right opportunities, we genuinely think this business really is going to get back to where it was and hopefully ahead of its 2019 levels. Just talking a bit about that to try and give you some idea of the growth in members. The top chart shows you the South African membership growth year to date. So it started with 497,000 members on the 1st of January at 70% of 2019 levels. That number has grown to 587 active members at 81% of 2019 levels. And again, if you look at the UK, it started with 257,000 members or 67% of 2019 levels, and that's grown to 318 or just under 80% of 2019 levels. On the right-hand side, you can see the October numbers. Closing members as a percentage of 2019 is around about 80%. It's just over 80, but rounding gets you to 80%. Closing members being 927,000 members with 2.4% of those on freeze, giving you active members of 905. Drawing your attention to the year-to-date growth, as I mentioned, 20% up year-to-date. That means on a net basis, we've added 151,000 members, and that compares with 55,000, so nearly a threefold increase over what was added in 2019. And I keep reminding people that 2019 was actually a strong year from a growth perspective in the business. Taking you quickly territory by territory, talking quickly on South Africa, you can see at the top where the restrictions were lifted. And again, without going into huge amounts of detail, the closing membership base in October is now 81%, up from May, which was the last time we reported to you at 78. Closing members of 595,000 with active members of 587,000 members. So growth year-to-date of 18% or 90-odd thousand memberships compared to 28,000 in the same period in 2019. Moving over to the UK, from a UK perspective, UK's closing membership is at 72%, up from 70% in May. So again, progress in the right direction. That means it has closing members of about 132, 5% of which remain on freeze. That's higher than historical averages. So we would hope to see that trend continue downwards with an active membership base of 125. Year-to-date growth of 17%. Year-to-date, and that is 18,000 memberships compared to 2,000 memberships in 2019. Moving across to Italy, as you can see, Italy there, the restrictions were only really lifted at the back end of March, starting of April. So we've had a relatively short period of time in Italy with the gyms fully open, but it's very, very pleasing to see the closing membership has jumped from 77% to 87% in October. dozing members gone from 129 to 145, and even better, the active membership base gone from 123 in May to 141. It's a very significant jump over the last couple of months. As I mentioned, year-to-date increase of 33% of 35,000 members compared to 8,000 for a similar period in 2019. Just finishing off on the territories around Asia-Pacific. Asia-Pacific is a laggard. As you can see at the top there, we remain restricted in what we can do in some of those territories, particularly around Singapore and Thailand. That said, the last couple of months have been better. Once Thailand and Singapore have been out, and you can see it in the numbers, you know, pretty much since June, you know, going from 45,000 members up to 52,000 members in October, which is pleasing and headed in the right direction. But we've always said that this part of the business in particular is going to take some time to get back to pre-COVID levels. As you can see in the October year-to-date numbers, 20% up year-to-date, but actually 9,000 additional members compared to 16,000 additional members in 2019. So it's the one territory that's a laggard compared to where we were in 2019. What we try to do, and we keep getting asked questions on this, and we keep refining how we show these numbers. I just want to spend a bit of time on this slide to show investors what we've done. What we've done in the top two charts, effectively, if you take the number of members in any particular month, closing members and any active members in a particular month, you charge it by times that number by the yield, which is effectively the average price that those members are paying year to date, and then you subtract the cost base year to date, or effectively an annualized cost in that particular month, you will get a very good idea of what the annualized run rate EBITDA is. Now, just to tell you, it's not a forecast. I don't want anyone to think that we're going to forecast the numbers going forward. All I can say is, for example, in October 22, if you take the normalized, the actual year-to-date yield, you add it to the, you times that by the number of subscribers or members we have as at October 22, and you take off the annualized costs, you will see that on an annualized basis, the group has moved to a positive £14 million of EBITDA compared to January, when on the same basis, the run rate was minus 25. The difference between those two, as you can see, is about £40 million. To give you an idea, the 150-odd million net subscriber growth adds about £65 million of revenue, of which 40 ends up as an increase in EBITDA. The chart on the bottom does a slightly exactly the same analysis. All it uses is a normalized yield. The difference between the two is, obviously, if you have specials in place at the time, for example, you offer 50% off the first 3 months of joining, your year-to-date yield will be below what we call a normalized yield, which is what that yield will be once the specials filter out after that three-month period. And again, on that basis, if we apply a normalized yield to today, October 22, we would be making, on a run rate basis, £24 million of EBITDA across the group. Obviously, there's a difference between different territories. On the top right-hand side, you will see from a yield perspective, what we've tried to show is what was the yield in 2019 on an average. So take South Africa, if you rebase that to 100, the year-to-date actual is 104, so a 4% yield increase, and the normalized yield that we use is also 104. Take the UK as an example, UK of 100. As you can see, the year-to-date actual yield is 91. We use a normalized yield of 98. The difference between those two is largely driven by the inner-city gyms, which are a higher margin, as you can imagine, higher revenue or higher yield. So obviously the fact that those are being underutilized is why, from a yield perspective, the UK is down compared to where it was in 2019, and hopefully from a normalized perspective, we'll go back to 98 or closer to 100. From Italy, for example, the year-to-date of 95, we've used a normalization pretty much in line with that of 94. And again, you can go down the list and see exactly what that means. Then at the bottom, what we try to show is what does that mean in terms of the total membership growth and the actual yield. So if you take, for example, the year-to-date average at 80%, that's where we are today, that 13.9 is the 14 that you see in the top left-hand chart. On a normalized yield, that would equate to 23.8, which is the 24 that you see on the left-hand side of that chart. So, for example, if we did not change the normalized yield going forward, and we had 100% of the same members that we had in 2019, the business would be making £116 million, excluding what we get from the Real Foods business. Again, to give you some idea of the 110, which is what we use for this part of the business, plus three for Real Foods, that is somewhere between the 84.8 you see on a normalized yield basis and 116. It probably equates to, as we've said before, somewhere between 96 and 97% of our total membership base. If we get back there, that effectively equates to the EBITDA, assuming no yield increase between now and then. Just moving on to the last slide quickly on Virgin Active, what's the focus area going forward? Absolutely key is the continued membership rebuild and yield. We focus on both. It's important to do so. We have seen relatively good membership growth, which has been good across the territories, but these have included some promotional offers. As I mentioned, you can get 50% off the first 3 months if you sign up to a 12-month contract. So things like that have impacted the year-to-date yield. We would hope to see that normalized, which is what we've tried to show in the numbers on the previous page. The key focus remains on getting the inner city clubs back to full capacity in UK, Italy, and Australia. From an operating cost perspective, there have been significant operating costs taken out of the business, both at a head office cost level, where we've restructured the management structure, and we need to continue to focus on costs in this business to ensure it's aligned with its potential growth. There's been very significant cost inflation, particularly around utilities in the UK and Italy, and this remains a key focus for management going forward. Obviously, to the extent we can continue to shift online membership enrollment, which will continue to reduce sales commissions, it's a very, very big cost across the group, and as we see that continue to grow, we will see that cost line item come down in time. From an IT perspective, we continue to develop and roll out the group membership app, which I think will be done early in the new year, and we genuinely believe this will significantly improve the customer experience, and as an engagement tool, we really do hope this will help us reduce churn and improve engagement across the portfolio. From a capital allocation perspective, I think I've touched on this. We need to continue to focus on where we should continue to invest and expedite trajectory back to pre-COVID levels. In some cases, that does mean we need to spend capex in advance of what we had in the plan. But we have a very quantitative and ROIC-focused decision-making framework to ensure that new capital spend is spent on the right projects. We do continue to manage the trade-off between liquidity, investing capital to grow, and liquidity, and that remains a very significant focus of both the board and the management team. And then lastly, obviously we need to continue to invest for growth. There are territories where we think that we could consolidate our leading market positions and grow. There are equally territories where we think we can prune some of the portfolio. So we need to continue to focus on that. We're investing into product and people, so by people we mean personal trainers, etc., to continue to ensure that the membership engagement and experience improves. And then we will continue to invest in new sites or enhance existing sites where we can see tangible opportunities to grow and to grow revenues. Moving quickly on to New Look. As you know, this is a much smaller component part of the business. It's around 5% of our NAV, so I'll touch on this much quicker. From a revenue perspective, up 3% year on year for the 26 weeks to £430 million of revenue. And relatively good performances. Retail up 7% in terms of revenue. Online slightly down. Growth in orders, but slightly down in terms of slightly higher returns in online. But again, across the mix, a relatively pleasing portfolio performance given the difficulties of the market. From an EBITDA perspective, up £28 million, which is up 4% year on year. But I'll touch over the page on what we say on the right hand side. Last year, we had £17.5 million of cost support from the UK government, which is not reflected in this year's numbers. So actually, if you compare year for year, a very significantly up performance by the management team. From a cash perspective, the business has £51 million of cash in the business, which excludes the £50 million that was recently raised by shareholders to repay the HSBC facility. So again, I think the business is in decent shape. The key is obviously going to be the December quarter, the next couple of months, to see how this business performs for the full year. Again, just touching quickly on this slide, I won't dwell on detail because I think I have mentioned it. Just to touch on the bottom left-hand side there, as you can see, year on year, as we mentioned, EBITDA up 4%. But actually, if you compare it to what EBITDA would have been if we didn't have the COVID relief from the UK government, the EBITDA has increased from £9.5 million to 28. So I think it is genuinely a very strong performance by the management team. Costs have been taken out of the business. The business has been managed very efficiently. And I really do think it has a platform to continue to grow in what is a very, very difficult operating environment. Just quickly getting onto the valuations. Without spending much time on the Premier valuation, we have not changed the methodology. We've kept it exactly the same as we've done for many years on a post-IFRS basis. We take the LTM EBITDA of 1635. We apply a 7.6 times multiple, which is effectively the peer group average on a post-IFRS basis. That gets you to an enterprise value of 12.5 billion. The net debt, and this is pre the special dividend, which is what I mentioned before, 1897, gives you a shareholder value of 10.6. That is equivalent of 9.6 when you compare it to the equity value that we're talking about in the IPO, because obviously we've received nearly 950 million dividends since then. At the bottom left-hand side, you can see the peer growth compared to the peer group, very significant growth this year, unlike the peer group. And I think very importantly, from a return on invested capital, which I saw some comments in this morning from Twitter as to why you would invest in a business like this, very importantly and pleasing to see a return on invested capital of 15% compared to a WACC of probably around 12. And that is a reason to invest in a business. If you can have a return on invested capital above your weighted average cost of capital, that should give you a premium rating. Moving to Virgin Active, again, we've kept the valuation methodology 100% the same, except for including the real foods business. So the 110 of sustainable EBITDA remains as a September 2024 EBITDA. We've added 3 million, which is what we believe the EBITDA will be from real foods. As at that point in time, we applied exactly the same multiples we have since March 2020. The adjustment to net debt is a slightly higher actual third-party net debt in the business, which is the cash burn in the business that we've seen over the last 6 months, has resulted in a slightly lower decrease in the valuation of around 480-odd million, £392 million, as the value of this business, with about a 400 million rand difference in valuation. As you can see on the top right, what we just tried to show in terms of ensuring that we look through the cycle, if you look back to January 2020, the peer group, they all had a market cap of 100. The peer group is now trading at 85 of what it was in January 2020. Our equity value within Virgin Active, where we value this business, is at 39% of where it was in that comparative period. Moving on to New Look, the New Look valuation methodology is exactly the same. We've used the same maintainable EBITDA despite, I think, a slightly better operating performance. We've applied the same multiple to it. The only difference between the two is, as you can see, our net third-party debt has come down. That's effectively the operating facility that was repaid with HSBC, and you can see the additional PIC facility that went in of 50. So actually, the valuation increase from a break perspective, it's flat year-on-year, excluding the 180-odd million that we injected to refinance the HSB operating facility. So again, very little change with respect to the valuation of this business. Just moving quickly on to the Brait strategy, again, very unchanged from where we showed you in May. Just in terms of the timeline, we've announced today the Premier IPO, which would result in Brait selling somewhere between 43 and 53% of its stake, depending where in the price range the IPO prices. The RCF will be fully settled. We will have 2 billion rand of surplus cash for general working capital purposes, investment purposes potentially. And if you look at the sale of New Look, which we're planning for somewhere between March 24 and September 24, that would enable us to repay the convertible bond with the existing money that we're raising, hopefully over the next couple of weeks in the Premier IPO. Post the exchange of the exchangeable bond, we would then unbundle the remaining Premier shares to Virgin Active, and Virgin Active shares to Brait shareholders. So absolutely the strategy remains on course. In fact, having dealt holistically with the debt, we would like to think there's an opportunity to expedite this unbundling, but obviously there are a couple of hoops to jump through. But this is what we promised to investors, and I think the listing of Premier is certainly a very key and first step in delivering that for investors. With that, I will hand over to any questions that that investors have. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star and then one on your touch-tone phone or on the keypad on your screen. For the participants on the webcast, if you'd like to ask a question, please type your questions in the webcast question box. We will pause to see if there are any questions. At this time, there are no questions on the phone lines. I'd like to hand over questions on the webcast. Thank you.
Thanks very much. The first question is from Titanium Capital. Charles, thanks very much again. The question is, will Premier allocation rights be offered to all Brait shareholders or only key institutions approached prior to listing? Will rights be allocated to all Brait shareholders who can elect to take up Premier IPO shares, failing which they will be taken up by parties that commit to take up long sign. I think I get your message. Charles, it will be offered to any existing Brait shareholder who is allowed to participate in the IPO. Obviously, there are restrictions from a retail perspective about who can or can't participate, but any Brait shareholder who wants to participate and can participate in a listing, which is not driven by us, it's driven by regulatory requirements, will be offered the same allocation rights. Just so I'm clear, it's not a guaranteed allocation, it's a preferential allocation. And by that I mean, let's say at the market clearing price of 60 Rand a premier share, we had an investor who wanted 200 million, and we had another investor who wanted 200 million. One was a Brait investor and the other wasn't. We would get preference, not a guaranteed allocation, but definite preference to the Brait investor so that they can mitigate any dilution through the offer. So, Charles, so long as you can participate, we look forward to being able to give you as much as you would need in the listing. Next question from Salt Light Capital, Dave. Please provide more detail on where the net proceeds of the Premier unbundling are going after paying the RCF. As you can imagine, Dave, there's, call it 2 billion rand of surplus cash in the business. We will obviously not be investing outside of our existing portfolio. There may be opportunities to invest in the existing portfolio where required, so that would always be something we would look to do. I mean, obviously from our perspective, Dave, we will continue to look at the capital structure, and by that I don't need to give much away. We've got a convertible bond there. Are there opportunistic things that we could do around that? Potentially. We would look to see how we can add value for investors around that. So we will look at all options, to be honest. But what we will do is ensure as far as possible that we ensure we have a hedged position against the convertible bond from a currency perspective. So there are lots of opportunities, Dave, both in the portfolio but also from a capital allocation perspective within the current capital structure. Second question. Most of the businesses are free cash flow positive. So is the intention that it goes to fund CapEx for Virgin Active? If so, how much do you anticipate being deployed? So again, to that question, there isn't a specific number that we have in mind. There are lots of really good growth opportunities in the portfolio. I think what we have seen is early investment in rejuvenation CapEx, and that's what I call it. So it's probably maintenance CapEx, but expedited maintenance CapEx really absolutely does pay dividends. There's probably 6 or 7 clubs in South Africa where we put decent capital spend in to rejuvenate the estate. You see it instantly in new membership growth and lower terminations. So for us, we sit there and say, well, look, guys, if we can expedite that and we can see a trend, would you put more capital in to expedite the growth back to 2019 levels? Of course you would. But we are extremely conscious of ensuring that we need to maintain liquidity as well as growth projects. So I think we will continue to look at opportunities there, Dave, but there's nothing penciled in for now. But the early signs are pretty clear to us that where you can find opportunities, and I'll give you another example, which is Wimbledon in the UK. Wimbledon, we genuinely believe that we can reinvest in that estate. It really does need some rejuvenation capex, but the ability to then increase the yield is you can genuinely tangibly see where the revenues can come from. So there's another opportunity where we would rather expedite it than wait till the capital is available. So I think it is going to be a wait and see where the opportunities arise. We've got a board meeting next week, Dave, where we'll go through line by line what management is looking to do. Moving on to the next question from Tiat at Roden Investment Management. Can you start buying back the convertible bonds with your surplus cash post-RCF paydown? Very importantly, in the exchangeable bond documents that we send out, you can't move capital past the exchangeable bond holders without their approval. So to the extent we wanted to do something around those, around the convertible bonds, we would need to first ensure that it is something that the exchangeable bondholders, who remember obviously benefit in the share price upside, are happy to do. But to the extent we can do that, and we think there's opportunities to do that with the investors that are in the exchangeable bond, yes, you would be able to start buying back the convertible bonds, but it's one of a number of things that we would look to do. The next question is, other cash injections in Virgin Active? Again, just to be clear, where the right opportunities exist to expedite growth and where we can see a tangible upside to doing so, we will continue to look at that. So, you know, we'd be mad not to, quite frankly, but there is nothing imminent that we are looking at today. As I mentioned, we've got a board meeting coming up. Clarissa from Fairtree, could you please let us know the run rate expense growth in the various VA territories currently? Oof, I actually don't have that number. Sure. Vanessa, sorry, Clarissa, I actually don't have that number. I'll be absolutely honest with you. But let me just give you some idea of from the top of my head here, right? Again, it's different by territory. I would say utility bills in the UK and Italy are round numbers around 10% of your cost base. As I mentioned, and I think I've told you this number before, where it was 2-3 months ago is those utility bills were 2-3-fold more than we had budgeted for. Not 2-3% more, 2-3-fold more. Now, obviously, it's come back a bit of late, but that gives you some indication of what sort of pressure is there around utility costs in a couple of those territories. Ironically, in South Africa, it's a bit the opposite. Our utility bills have come in slightly lower than we had budgeted. So it is territory by territory different. From the UK perspective, we've taken out significant costs through the restructuring. So, you know, costs like for like are down in the UK. We've added a couple of new clubs in Italy, three new clubs, as you know, so the cost base is slightly higher in Italy. So it's very difficult territory by territory. I think I've mentioned to you in the past that, again, probably 30% of our cost base in the South African business is driven by rentals. And around that, what are we seeing? We are seeing rental reductions, literally across the portfolio. As I mentioned, we've probably got a 10 to 12 year cycle in terms of doing so. So if you think about that, it's about 8 to 10% of your portfolio comes up for renewal. And on those, we are seeing anywhere between a 15 and 30% reduction in many cases in potential costs. So, yeah, I can't answer the question. I don't have it to hand. But I would suggest, yeah, management have got a good handle on costs, and we're trying to keep them down to the extent possible. Obviously, there's some exogenous factors, particularly around utility bills. Those are the only questions that I have, so we can go back to the lines in case there are any others.
At this time, there aren't any questions, but I would just like to remind people that have dialed in, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star and then one. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star and then one. We will pause to see if there are any further questions. Peter, there are no questions on the phone lines. Could I perhaps hand over to you for closing remarks if there aren't any questions on the webcast?
Thanks very much. Firstly, again, I just want to thank all the investors for taking the time. You know, we genuinely do appreciate it. As we always say between Rowan, myself, and Sabella, we're always available to ask, you know, answer any questions. So if there are any, please reach out. You know, hopefully people can see that, you know, what we said on the can in terms of unbundling and getting the value back to shareholders is starting to take place. We would really hope that shareholders participate and enjoy the benefit, hopefully, of a new listing on the JSE. But we really appreciate the support we've had over many years from the Brait investor base, and we look forward to obviously completing the Premier IPO. Many thanks for taking the time. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude today's conference. Thank you very much for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines.